You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this talk, Reggie questions the pervasive use of the word enlightenment in Buddhism. The word often conveys a sense of disconnection, separation, and perfection. Yet Trungpa Rinpoche taught that true realization is marked by connection, responsiveness, and transparency. This talk was given at the 2006 Winter Datun, a month-long retreat held at the Blazing Mountain Retreat Center in Crestone, Colorado.
I want to talk to you very briefly about a topic. Somebody came in the other day and said, we have these wonderful enlightened Tibetan teachers, really enlightened people. But then they said about me, but it's nice to have somebody that can see you and communicate with you. And I thought I would tell you some things that Trungpa Rinpoche said on the matter of enlightenment. Enlightenment is another one of these words that we have heard thrown around. It's a term that's used a lot in Buddhism. But again, I think we have to really look at it, and we have to see what it communicates, and whether what it communicates is actually true, that you're not really human, you're above it all. To some extent, this is based on a certain way of practicing, which is that you focus very heavily on your breath, and you carry out your meditation to distance yourself from your relative person. Those of you who have been taught a very heavy focus on the breath know that you may be the most fucked up person on the planet, but if you push hard enough, you can actually disconnect yourself from your relative truth, and you can get yourself into a state of mind that is devoid of relative experience, and especially of your fucked up, negative, neurotic relative experience. It can be done. And there are people, and there are traditions of being able to do that, of being able to actually exit from yourself and to get into a state of mind that is devoid of relative experience. And when an emotion comes up, you just go back to the breath. You get really good at it. When something comes up, some kind of attack of paranoia or jealousy, back to the breath. And over time, you can actually train your psychological being to go into a state of hibernation. And with all due respect, you know, I think for a period of time in the history of Buddhism, that was okay. It was okay to do that. And, you know, you could show people that, you know, you can get into this state where you're free of all imperfection. But the big problem is what's under the surface. I mean, is this state of being truly what we would call a fully realized state of being, or is it a temporary ability that is developed, you know, through a lot of practice to get yourself into a state that's clear? What's under the surface? Now, here are some things, some observations. What I'm doing here is questioning the concept of enlightenment altogether as it's used and understood. This is what I'm doing here. But we all carry it around to some extent. Number one. In the Tibetan cultural framework, Rinpoches are very, very careful never to show their humanity to their followers or their students. They do not acknowledge that they're making a journey. They do not show any emotions that would be considered inconsistent with a fully realized person. You have to hide what's really going on, because you have to be able to present to people that you're a fully enlightened person. Now, we all know you're not, but you have to, and this is what the children are taught as they're brought up, you know, we all know you're not, but you have to present that way because that's the best for the lay people. You know, it's very important for them to think that you're perfect, because then they'll have great devotion. They'll have great devotion for you and for this monastery and this lineage, because they'll feel, well, these are really realized people, and, you know, I'm just an ordinary person, but they're really doing it. Trungpa Rinpoche, during his upbringing, was led in this direction. And at a certain point, he just said, you know, this is completely off, and I'm not doing it. And he also met some other people who didn't do it either, Kensa Rinpoche and some others. So he was lucky. He met some other people who didn't go there. But that the whole weight of the tradition is disconnect from your own relative experience and do not acknowledge that you're on the journey and that you're a human being. Now you might say, well, what's the problem? The problem is what it communicates to the students is that somehow what they are and what realization is are completely different things, and that their ordinary human experience is not part of it. That's what's communicated. The problem with that is that it's a completely misleading, and they are disempowered as people, because you have these idealized father figures, and they're all men, of course, and then you have everybody else. So that's one problem. So we're asking what's under the surface. Another thing that's under the surface is enlightened people are supposed to be very compassionate, right? Compassionate. In Tibet, and this is one of my personal pet peeves, the Tibetan hierarchy lived in a culture where the lower class people, if they did anything wrong, were punished brutally. They had their hands chopped off for stealing things, their eyes gouged out, and the hierarchy did nothing about it. Century after century after century, they did nothing. They allowed that kind of brutal treatment to go on. Muslims do not believe that butchering an animal and eating the meat is a bad thing. They just don't believe that. In Tibet, there was a Muslim population. If Muslims were caught butchering animals according to their own beliefs, they were hung up by their arms, so their arms dislocated, and they were beaten with 2x4s. That's just standard procedure. And the hierarchy in Tibet did nothing about it. They let it go on. And they said, we're very compassionate. You know, we love all sentient beings. We want to relieve suffering. And they allowed people to be tortured, beaten, and killed. And it just went on. And nobody said anything. I mean, it wasn't like there was a big protest movement and the political people, you know, beat them down. No one said anything. They said, oh, well, this is just life, you know. So that's under the surface. Now, here's the thing. I'm not criticizing the Tibetans, by the way. But what I am criticizing is hypocrisy in the tradition. I'm not criticizing them. They're people like us. I mean, they have preserved this tradition. But what I am criticizing is hypocrisy. And the problem with hypocrisy is it misleads people. It's like Jacob saying, well, these people are very enlightened people. Very enlightened, you know, very enlightened, wonderful, you know, people, but they can't communicate with me. I mean, what does enlightenment mean at that point? I mean, if they can't communicate, I'm not saying they all can't, but if certain, these supposedly enlightened people can't communicate and they can't see us for who we are, I mean, what does enlightenment mean at that point? If people are being tortured and killed under their watchful gaze, what is enlightenment? What is it? If they are not willing to show who they are, what is it? This is all from Trungpa Rinpoche. These are the kind of questions he asked himself, which is one reason he left the whole scene. He realized, you know, something's a little off here. Enlightenment, in my opinion, is a worthless concept, because it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything anymore. When we look under the surface to see what this term refers to, we see a very, very fundamental disconnection from one's own integrity, often from a willingness to share one's life with one's students, from one's own emotional life, from one's own journey, from addressing the needs in a culture and the abuses in a culture that have been going on for centuries. It's a disconnection, and a disconnection from other people. You know, the whole notion of these very high thrones, and, you know, with some of the Rinpoches, if you come to them, you have to go like this so you don't get your foul, stinking breath on them. I mean, what kind of a message does that send out to the practitioner about him or herself and his or her life and his or her journey? It's not a positive message. It's very much like Imperial China and the tremendous, huge gulf between the Son of Heaven, you know, the Emperor, who is virtually a deity, and everybody else. I don't know if anyone saw The Last Emperor. You know, I think in the West, often the Chinese communists get a very bum rap. I mean, you know, if you know anything about China today, it's a nightmare. I mean, really, it's a true nightmare. And the chaos and confusion of that culture and what, you know, they've been through and what's happened, I mean, it's terrible, really. But the thing is, they were onto something. When they said there's something wrong with this, the Son of Heaven, and then you have the palace people, you know, the eunuchs, basically, who kind of ran the country, and then you have the Confucians, who are actually generally very decent people and trying to do something decent, but then you have this other completely corrupt thing going on. It was a big mess. And the Tibetans actually know they're trying to create this big hierarchy that's based on China. It's them copying the Chinese situation. And a lot of what has come down is, in the present day, it's not that helpful. Me kind of sitting here and calling into question the concept of enlightenment as it exists in the cultures. I won't say in the texts, because the texts are different. It's not presented like it's seen in the culture. I mean, that's not something I could figure out. This is what Trungpa Rinpoche did. And he did it in two ways. One is, the more realized he became, the more human he became. The more realized he became, the more willing he was to show, you know, people have been saying, it's really nice you show your process, we appreciate that. And sort of the implication is, well, you're kind of working on yourself too, and, you know, I mean, these Tibetans are these enlightened people up here, and that's, you know, they're really enlightened, and they're completely beyond everything, and fully, you know, perfect beings. And then there's us down here, and it's nice you show your process. Trungpa Rinpoche showed us that the process is the realization. That if enlightenment means anything, it means our willingness to be who we are and to surrender moment by moment to how our life unfolds. If enlightenment means anything, that's what it means. It doesn't mean getting beyond the relative world. It's so important we understand this. It is so important we understand this. The development of urban culture, which I've been talking about a lot here, you know, beginning with the invention of agriculture, is nowadays being studied by a lot of people. And believe me, there's a lot of consistency in what people are coming to. And I'm telling you just a little bit about it. But anthropologists and archaeologists and cultural historians, people realize that when this whole thing, this transition happened 10,000 years ago, slowly, but when it happened, we disconnected. And that disconnection has accelerated. And Buddhism, in its original teachings, in the practicing lineage in East Tibet and in a few pockets, was an attempt to overcome the disconnection. Buddhism provides the methods to overcome the disconnection. But most of institutionalized Buddhism is just an expression, the way Christianity is, of the disconnection. Organized Buddhism, Christianity, are not causes of the disconnection, but they are symptoms of it. So, when you disconnect from something, you lose, as we've been talking about here, you lose the nourishment. It's like a city and the water supply is cut off. What happens to the city? Pretty soon everybody's dying of thirst. And that's the situation we're in. And unfortunately, the concept of enlightenment, as it is used not only in Tibetan Buddhism, but in some of the other Buddhist traditions, it is an expression of our disconnection, and it reinforces our disconnection. Do you understand what I'm saying? So my suggestion is that we no longer use that term enlightenment, because it suggests a state of separation and alienation from relativity. According to Trungpa Rinpoche, the more we surrender to our own life, the more realized we are. Realization is a state, if we want to talk about, you know, the sort of kind of ideal of realization, is a state where we no longer resist the life that we find ourselves in and the person that we are called to become. That's what realization is. No longer resisting, surrendering to this world as it truly is, and not engaging in continually backing away, judging, pushing away, disconnecting, cutting ourselves off. You know, that's the process of disconnection. And the more we overcome the process of disconnection, as we've been talking about this whole Dhaton, the more connected we find ourselves to be. Ultimately, realization is a transparency to life, fully transparent to life. One time somebody asked Trungpa Rinpoche, what is meditation? One of the great things about the early days is people ask these basic questions. What is meditation? I thought he was going to say something like, well, you know, you work on yourself, you practice. No. What he said was meditation is responsiveness to life. Meditation is the openness, the willingness, and the ability to respond to life. In other words, to be connected with what is, to be in connection and communion with our life. Our life, our personal life, our life among the community, both the living and those who have passed beyond, who are completely part of the community and the natural world. That's what meditation is. To be a realized person is to be transparent to that infinite web of interconnections. You will find this same point of view in Thich Nhat Hanh's writing. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh basically, he calls this inter-being. You know, when we be, when we are, it's not in isolation or disconnection. It is inter. It is with the others. It is in interconnection with the others. So, in any way, sealing oneself off in Buddhism, in meditation, in Tibet, whatever it may be, in, you know, Southeast Asia, the idea of cutting oneself off from life as being enlightenment, no. No, absolutely not. You have to realize there's nothing wrong with what's happened up till now in Buddhism. I mean, Buddhism has been what it's needed to be. But now something different needs to happen. There needs to be a willingness to look at every single term used in the tradition and ask ourselves, is this term and this meaning working anymore? And in many cases, the answer is no, at least in my view. We need to start fresh. It takes a lot of work to get to the point where you can start fresh. And Trungpa Rinpoche taught the path to arriving at the point where you can start fresh. And this is the four jhanas: Hinayana, Mahayana, Vajrayana, and Shambhalayana. So there's a lot of work that needs to happen based on Buddhist tradition and using Buddhist principles and practices. But where we're looking to arrive is in this world at this moment with this group of people, this history, and this dying planet. And how, you know, given that situation, which, you know, frankly has never existed before, it's a completely unprecedented situation, given that situation, what does it mean to be a realized person now? And of course it's going to be different from the old days. No problem. I personally don't think we need to criticize any past culture for the way it's been. A lot of people like to go back and look at how women were treated, you know, in India. We weren't there. We don't really know. We don't need to run down the past. But what we do need to do is let go of the past. And we need to see what's needed right now. And believe me, we are on a voyage of personal and cultural discovery right now. I want to suggest that the term enlightenment that is used, particularly in Tibetan Buddhism, it's very tricky. It has a lot of political implications. It has a lot of psychological implications. It's deliberately used to try to magnetize donors in the Tibetan competitive religious environment of Tibet, ancient Tibet. It's used to keep people who are lower class people, keep them down. I mean, you know, the Marxists could and did do a lot with that situation in Tibet. You know, you're using your Buddhism as a way to maintain a system of privilege and hierarchy, not only religious, but also social. I want to suggest that we not, as modern people, that we not just take that term and use it as it's been used, because it just really doesn't fit our situation. It doesn't work anymore. And one of the interesting points, you know, Trungpa Rinpoche was the most human of all human people. And he basically said, if your teacher's not on the journey, and if your teacher is not human, and if your teacher is not becoming more human and more nakedly human as time goes by, you better find another teacher. Because the old style doesn't work anymore. Again, this is not something I would have ever figured out, but I saw it in him and I heard him talk about it. And one found oneself very responsive. We're using the Aboriginal language, you know, as a way to talk about our equality. And if you read the early texts of Buddhism, but the Buddha was very free and easy with his students. They didn't put him on some kind of big high throne. They were nice to him. You know, when he showed up, they'd give him some water and some food and ask how he was doing. But he talked to his disciples and he called them friend, you know, friends. This is the nature of reality. And they walked around together in India, you know, the Buddha, you know, maybe 5-6 students. Just walk around. Where should we stay tonight? Well, we could stay under this tree. Let's meditate. Okay, we'll meditate. It was very casual. It was very indigenous compared to what Buddhism became later. Very, very, you know, Aboriginal feel to it. And in the jungles always. They didn't, in spite of what is said, they didn't hang around the towns that much. They went into the towns periodically, spent a lot of time in the jungle, wandering around, and who knows what they were doing when they were meditating. Who knows what they ran into? Who knows what kind of situations arose? It wasn't written down. So, just another thing for you to think about. And, you know, this willingness to let the language go and to make our own discoveries and see how it needs to be, again, is only possible because of the disciplines taught by the Buddha and the later practicing lineage. So this is a very important point. We're not throwing out the lineage of the awakened ones. And awake, I like that. Awake, I can live with that. Enlightened, no. Because it sounds like some kind of permanent condition beyond relativity. But awake, that's good. That works for me. So we're not in any way kind of disparaging the path and the journey and the practices at all, because what we are trying to do is we're trying to separate out the path, which has always been the heart of this tradition of Dharma, from the socio-political, conservative, hierarchical, bureaucratic thing that came to overlay the whole thing. We need to take that massive cultural thing, which, believe me, it's from top to bottom, and we need to put it over here, and we need to remember the example of Trungpa Rinpoche, which is you practice, you follow the journey, and then you come out into a world that's new, and you have to meet that world. That's what we're talking about here. So it's very interesting, you know, it's relying on the tradition and relying on the path of transformation that it makes possible, but not relying on the conclusions that other people have drawn. Do you see the difference? Total devotion to the practice, but realizing that the conclusions that we will draw from the practice need to be fresh and new. And most of the language that has been used in the way that it's been used is very much tied up with an out-of-date way of looking at reality, and it's not helpful. The big question is today, is Buddhism going to be able to separate itself from this pre-modern, patriarchal, hierarchical, conservative, culturally stratified way of thinking? Can it separate itself? Again, please don't expect the people who are teaching that tradition, who come from Asia and in some ways are the most conservative Asians. Did you know this? It's very, very interesting. The most conservative Asians are the Buddhists. The most resistant to change are the Buddhists. It's very strange. The modern world is moving ahead, and they don't want to do it. And we're really talking about the men. If you go to Korea, if you go to Southeast Asia, you find that the disenfranchised Buddhists, which are the women, are doing the most interesting things. They're the most flexible, the most adaptive. They're the ones that are taking the tradition and really doing the most with it. I'm not saying it's true of all. Obviously, this generalization is not entirely true. But generally speaking, there's a big problem in Asia because the conservative monastic people want to hang on to what they're doing. And even the ones in diaspora, they want to hang on to the way they've been taught. They don't want to change. And the whole thing, well, this person's enlightened, is part of that whole attempt to stave off any kind of real fundamental change in the tradition.
More of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Kechog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.